Earlier this week, President Barack Obama toured the Oso disaster site. He was en route to Asia, where he's negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You might have read about that in the news. It's a major trade agreement between the United States and 11 Asian nations. It would affect many American businesses, including Washington State multinationals like Boeing. So, of course, this trade agreement has a lot of support from free traders, but it's also provoked criticism from both sides in the other Washington, environmental groups and labor, mostly on the Democratic Party side. Also, Republicans, who often support free trade agreements. David Deese is a political science professor at Boston College, and he joins us now to talk about it. Hi, David.
Hi.
So before we get to the politics, just the 30-second version, what exactly is the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
So it is a broad Pacific Basin minus China agreement that would lower barriers on a number of different items that are important in the trade among these countries. And then it would also connect in and liberalize rules around government procurement and intellectual property rights and other connected issues in trade that have become, you know, part of many agreements that the U.S. seeks to negotiate.
And Barack Obama's over there this week talking it up. And normally, of course, Republicans tend to be very supportive of these kinds of trade deals. But in this case, it's proving to be a lot more controversial. Why is that?
Well, exactly. President Clinton, for example, relied upon and appealed more to Republican members of the Senate for support for the North American Free Trade Agreement in 1993-94, and also for the Uruguay round, you know, global trade talks and that deal in 94. And this time around, similarly, President Obama would be appealing in a broad sense more even to Republicans in the Senate than the Democrats. The problem here is that part of what they need to open up are agricultural markets. And agricultural markets, in certain products at least, are the most protected still in international trade. Those interests are deeply ingrained in the Japanese electoral system and political interests. And they're deeply ingrained in the U.S. system, too. A number of the strongest agricultural interests are also connected intimately with members of the Republican Party and parts of the U.S. That are more connected with the Republican Party.
So, I see. So this is a real constituent objection. Is there also a political calculation on the Republican side?
Well, sure. I mean, at this point in the election cycle, of course, with the midterm elections looming in 6 months or so, the Republicans are not enthusiastic about giving the president any, you know, major foreign policy accomplishment. And similarly, you know, they're going to be looking to try to minimize the major talking points for Hillary Clinton, you know, if she were to become the Democratic nominee for the presidential race in 2 years.
Yeah, and there's also criticism, of course, from trade, from the left, from labor groups, from environmental groups. What are the main objections there?
Well, as you mentioned, environmental and labor groups, among others, are concerned because as the number of issues that get connected with trade broaden out to include, you know, health and safety, typically environmental issues, trying to attach in some of our agreements fundamental labor rights. And in this negotiation, for example, the United States started out arguing for mandatory environmental requirements and rules that would go along with this agreement, you know, trying in a positive sense to at least not have trade contribute to environmental degradation and possibly even to accelerate trade in green products and energy-related materials and so forth. That did not go too well or too far with the negotiating countries in the Pacific Basin that have generally argued against any kind of mandatory, you know, environmental rules.
And David Deese, political science at Boston College, we're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a trade agreement with Asian nations. Barack Obama's over in Asia right now talking this up. And as I understand it, the president he can talk about it, but he doesn't have the power to make any final decisions here. So I've got just about a minute left. But David Deese, what do you expect to see happen kind of once things return to normal, we get past the midterm elections? Where's it all going to end up?
Well, right, in the big sense, of course, in the Constitution, the Congress regulates commerce, and that's one of the areas where the Constitution has actually been held up and worked in practice. And so traditionally, often Congress has delegated this temporary fast track or trade promotion authority to the president, who negotiates an agreement. They can bring it back to the Congress for a time limit, a deadline on it, and also a streamlined procedure for voting it up or down. Since the president doesn't have that authority, it weakens him a little bit in the negotiations with trade partners like Japan. So it would be in the U.S. interest for the president to have this authority. Since he doesn't have it, he has to negotiate this agreement, bring it back to
Congress. I got about 20 seconds left. What do you see happening?
Well, if we can get a deal done with Japan and then with the other countries, I would think there'd be a lot of pressure on the Senate to approve it.
All right, David Deese, going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much. He's a political scientist at Boston College, telling us about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a major trade agreement between the U.S. and 11 Asian nations. Barack Obama's negotiating it right now. It would affect a lot of American businesses, including Boeing. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Marcy Silman. I'm David Hyde.